This is Sheila Winstead speaking on behalf of Roseau County Historical Society. Norbert Dostal took the time to write down a bunch of stories, which he put in a booklet called The Changing Times on the Farm Scene, 1910 to 1986. Today, in honor of Veterans Day, I'll be reading from his story about World War I. Here it is. When I was almost 7 years old, the war in Europe was going so badly for those against the Germans that it was feared that Germany might win. At the same time, the people in Russia were in for drastic changes. We as children weren't a bit aware of what was going on until the propaganda machines started to roll. In those days, everyone was less sensitive to what was taking place in the world because only the grapevine and the newspapers spread the news. There were no radios in every home like we've had now for a long time. I never heard that radio was used in World War I. It had already been invented in Italy and was just trying its wings at wartime. The United States was not in the war when it began in 1914. The Germans had the use of something that Jules Verne had only imagined long before when he wrote 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. That was the submarine. They used this hard-to-detect weapon as a terror on the seas. In 1915, they sank the Lusitania, and about 100 U.S. citizens lost their lives. The United States declared war on Germany, and right away, camps of tents were set up all over this land of the free and the home of the brave. It was a shame that the drafted boys had such a fast training that, as Eddie Sphere, who came home with part of his face shot off, said, "I didn't know one end of my gun from the other." An exaggeration, no doubt, explaining the poor training. I think that they were in camp about 1 month before they were sent overseas. News came by ocean cable, land cable, telegraph, newspapers, and telephone. In school, we were made very aware that there was a war. Peace and food seemed to be much talked about. There was a sort of built-up feeling that we were going to win. I'm quite sure that there were posters and mottos in the schools, as well as in the towns. Everybody seemed to talk about the Kaiser, and in school we heard the older boys saying, "Kaiser Bill went up the hill to take a look at France. Kaiser Bill came down the hill with bullets in his pants." Later, one of the poems that we had to memorize was "In Flanders Fields." We were given free seeds to grow in victory gardens. We knew firsthand at home something of marching boys, as Pa was a sergeant in the home guard in Badger. I saw Pa drill other men up and down the street. He wore a uniform too. I don't know for sure if it was the same one he had from being in Fort Flagler on the West Coast for 3 years, or if home guards got a special uniform. The war lasted until November 11, 1918. That, to us, was a long time, and I think it was like forever to the boys in the camps and in the trenches. I've got to remind myself that I was only somewhat over 8 when the war ended. In between the start and the finish, seemingly too much took place. I recall Liberty Bonds being pushed and that we had a president called Woodrow Wilson. I am told now that all our troubles with communism started at that time and have been cropping up ever since. Hoover, who later was our president, had much to do with sending food to France. I can recall that sugar and white flour wasn't had in our homes and how syrup was used for breakfast instead of sugar. We found out later that the French didn't have good storage for our food, which spoiled in the piles that were left in the rain. We at home had to eat tough bread made of barley flour. Our shoes were so poor that they barely seemed to last at all, but the land of the free, that was our land. During World War I, a flu epidemic raged. Anyone who lived in those days and escaped that epidemic that spread over the world was rather fortunate, for most people got at least a light case. Very many got a very serious fever and complications that ended in death, both in the soldier camps and in the whole land, everywhere. Doctors went from house to house and from farm to farm tending the sick. On farms, there was often not one person that was well enough to do the chores. A neighbor was called on the old crank phone, and if he wasn't sick, he'd come and help. Many wouldn't dare to come into the house if they hadn't already had the flu. They would talk over the phone, or maybe through the window, to ask what to do, or how the family was getting along. Of course, most people recovered if they took care of themselves. Medical care and medication was not as advanced as it is now. People did die because they were already in poor health or tried to do their work when they were much too sick. Even if the parents were sick, they would force themselves to tend to their children's needs. I found out that the World War I flu epidemic took 20 million lives. I don't think anybody knew what the word flu before that war. The slogan for the war was, "The war to end all wars." It sounded okay, I think you'll agree. There was about the limit of propaganda spread for the purpose of keeping the public excited. I wonder what it would have been like if we would have had a radio. Always during any special social troubles, the newsmen have a heyday. World War I was much different than any war before it. It was brewing long before it broke out, and the machines that were required to overcome the enemy were much different. We know about tanks, machine guns, heavy bombs, and extra big guns as we got to the upper grades. Our books in school told us a lot of things that sounded okay and patriotic, and now we know it was just to impress us with what a great country we live in. Of all the places in the world, this land is still a wonderful place in which to live. What else do I recall about the war? I recall boys like John Pennis, who barely left for the camps, tents, as the armistice of November 11, 1918 was signed, and they came back almost on the same train. The telephone on the wall seemed to outdo itself on that general ring, as it kept telling that the war was over. The churches all kept the bells ringing, and I'm sure that everyone was very happy, except in those homes that had already had a boy come home in a box, or those that knew that someone was missing in action. Some boys didn't come home for a long time, as they were being patched up in army hospitals. Some, like Uncle Joe Dostal, had been gassed and shell-shocked and were almost worse than those that got hurt. Thank you to Wild 102 for this time to tell our stories, especially this one that tells about the first Armistice Day to be celebrated, which eventually became Veterans Day.